Good afternoon. And welcome to everyone who's joining us on the internet as well. Over the past few weeks, I've been using a word rather frequently, singularity. Singularity is like a glass of pure water. There's nothing extraneous to the water in it. It's all water. Mind is a singularity. I will say consciousness is a singularity, but the preferable word is mind. Each of you is likely to say that you have a mind. But as long as you use that phrase, you will almost inevitably hinder yourself from waking up. You don't have a mind. You are mind. You're not a body that has a mind. You are mind that has the conscious experience of body, world, universe. Mind, because it's a singularity, has no boundaries. It's infinite. And it's all-inclusive. Infinitely. You, as mind, are that awareness of all that is infinitely. You share the perspective of God, because the mind that is God, that is the movement of creation, is not different from the singularity called mind that you are. At the moment, you all know that you're not experiencing all of creation infinitely at this moment. It's very localized, your experience of consciousness. But I'm telling you that this mind that you are is infinitely all-inclusive, and all, universally speaking, is available for you to experience in addition to this highly localized awareness that you are limiting yourself to. So this infinite mind isn't something for you to achieve. It's something for you to, I'm going to say, let happen to you. Let happen to you. Let it in. And what does this mean? In order to let in the experience of singularity, which is an experience of wholeness, because there's nothing left outside of it, you must, in order to have the experience of singularity, be willing to abandon, for lack of better words, your addiction to conflict. You have to be willing to abandon your commitment to thinking for yourself in inconsistent ways. We'll say straddling the fence, or trying to embrace two opposing things simultaneously. I've shared before the prayer that Paul says before each gathering. Thy will, not mine, be done. Let the reign of divine truth, life, and love be established in me. Well, I've already stated that mind is a singularity. There's no alternative to it. It's already a singularity. So, the reign of divine truth, life, and love is already established in you. But the prayer says, let the reign of divine truth, life, and love be established in me. It's a way of saying, I am willing to stop interposing something in addition to what's already established in me. I'm willing, I'm asking myself to let it be established in me, to let it be the only thing there is in me, because it really is the only thing there is in me. Let the reign of divine truth, life, and love be established in me, and what? Rule out of me all self-will. Well, I know you all have ideas about what willfulness is, but willfulness is when you're introducing, is when you are trying to introduce something into the mix on your own. Whether it's a creative idea, whether it's an angry feeling, it's always something original to you. Self-will is an expression of something that is original to you, that has left God out of the picture entirely. Whether it's a pleasant thing or an unpleasant thing, it's when you are introducing stuff all by yourself. When you are introducing anything on your own, you're not being a co-creator with God. It's that simple. Let the reign of divine truth, life, and love be established in me and rule out of me all self-will. That expresses an intent to be singular, which is another way of saying be whole. If you have a glass of water that also has some oil in it, or some vinegar in it, or any other substance, there's water and vinegar. There's water and that other substance, and so there are places where there isn't water, and places where there is water. You have more than one thing going on in the same space. And it isn't a whole glass of water. When something is singular, it is whole. It is wholly what it is, wholly. When there is an expressed intent and desire on your part, to let the reign of divine truth, life, and love, we'll say the reign of what is real, be established in you, and rule out your apparent right that you think you have to introduce things on your own all by yourself as an independent authorizer. You are abandoning being an independent authorizer. And in the absence of your bringing something extra into the mix, wholeness is what is left. Singularity is what is left. And the result of that is the experience of singularity, the experience of the integrity of everything, and the way it all fits, and the way it is harmonious. I did say this. If thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. Now that's a literal statement. Because the substance of everything, including your body, is spirit, which is love. And love is light. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. When your eye becomes single, when your consciousness, we'll say, allows only for singularity, you will find everything illuminated from within. The energy of spirit that is love is light. And the light has color, and it has colors you haven't dreamed of, and the colors express the specific intent embodied as every single creation. So that you know what a thing is by its color. You know who an individual is by the colors. And as I've said before, this light that is living love, you experience as loving you. You are right now loved by absolutely every object you see. Because it ain't matter. I say this over and over to remind you, because you easily forget the habit of treating it as though it's matter, dense, solid matter, is very deeply ingrained. And you need to be reminded to be looking for something more than what you're seeing and what you're expecting to see because you're so sure you know what it is. When the Course speaks of turning toward the altar, it means doing what that prayer embodies, doing what that prayer expresses, embodying what that prayer expresses. Let the reign of divine truth, life, and love be established in me. If that's not your desire, then you're not turning toward the altar. If you're turning toward the altar, it's because you want to know the truth. You want to be infilled with the truth. You don't want to be suffering ignorance any longer. Let the reign of divine truth, life, and love be established in me, as it already is. And rule out of me all self-will. If you think about it, you might come to the conclusion that if you're not going to engage in self-will, and if self-will is an expression of not being joined with the Father and not listening for His will, then you probably won't end up talking or acting or doing anything that you've been used to doing, because you've been doing it all by yourself. What will be left? What will be left will be what counts. What will be left will be you engaging in actions that are truly meaningful, even if they're not the ones you've been engaging in forever. You will be the presence of love that will bless everyone and that everyone will feel. And they will be grateful and they will rejoice that you have abandoned engaging in self-will. You won't become inactive, but you will begin doing new things, and you will begin being in new ways compared to the old ways. It will constitute a shift And of course, the primary shift will be from getting to giving, from acting in your self-interest to behaving in a way that embraces, includes, is sensitive to, and blesses others. You see, love is a singularity too. And getting isn't love. Self-love isn't love. Selfish love isn't love. And again, until another is the reason for your giving love, you won't know how to love yourself because you won't know who you are. And when you find out what you are, you will find out that you're not a what. When you find out who you are, you will find out that you're not a who, but that you're a what. And what I mean by that is that when you're willing to shift into a way of being based on extension, on giving, you find yourself infilled with the Father's love. And you know what? You find out that you're not a who, but that what you are is that which is worthy of the Father's love. That you are the place where the Father comes into expression. You are a vehicle for all that God is being. And you are also the mind, the singular mind that recognizes that your function is the recognition and acknowledgement of God in everything. You might say that the what that you are is, I'm going to say, the function in the mind of God of recognizing. In other words, God recognizing himself in everything is what you are. When you get up in the morning, when you get up in the morning, what is your expectation? Your expectation needs to be that from the moment you wake up, you're going to be discovering God everywhere. That's called a mind alert to good. A mind alert to reality. On the other hand, when you get up in the morning, is this the day you're going to get even with so-and-so? Is this the day you're going to stand up for yourself and tell someone off? You see the difference? Mind you, I'm not talking about how anyone else is behaving. I'm talking about how you're intending to use your mind. You do something, and somebody says, "You hurt my feelings," and you say, "I'm sorry, I didn't intend to." And the question needs to be asked, but did you intend not to? A singular mind intends not to be the presence of that which is different from love. No matter how anyone else is behaving, you can intend not to behave in a way that is unloving, even though being the presence of love may mean saying no to someone else's behavior. Okay. Because all there is mind, and mind is a singularity, then what you would call the laws of being are the laws of singularity, and they govern your experience whether you're conflicted or unified, whether you're disintegrated in the way you're using my mind, your mind, or integrated. Therefore, if your mind is single, purely singular, everything you engage in will embody and express singularity, harmony, love. But also, because mind is a singularity, if you are choosing to be conflicted, if you are choosing to embrace conflicting feelings, I love you, but I hate you, as though you're capable of doing both, then, because of the laws of singularity, that which is at the heart of the intent will be what is created. And so, if you're conflicted, the irreversible result will always be division. Do you see how that's the same law applying? If you are a single eye, if your mind is singular, everything that you do will express unity. And you might even say that it will unify. But if you choose to be conflicted in your mind, everything you do will find expression in creating division, war, fights, arguments. The attempt to best someone else, to be better than someone else. Division. Why am I spending so much time? Because once again I'm trying to convey to you that now, are you the sons of God and daughters of God, that you're neither behind the point of perfection nor advancing toward it. You're at that point and must understand yourself therefrom. Because you're at that point, you must begin to see that because you are, there are going to be certain results to your behavior. If you are going to behave as though you are the Son of God and you are at the point of perfection, if you choose for that, everything you do will manifest unity. And because you are at the point of perfection and the laws of singularity are the only thing that exist, if you choose to be conflicted within yourself, then everything that you do, everything that will follow that, will embody and seemingly create the effect of division. So you're not trying to become a singular mind. You're not trying to become equal to an awakened being. You are the ultimate right now. And it's a matter, all it is a matter of choice as to how you're going to use your mind. That demystifies the process of awakening. It also makes clear to you that it isn't about the future, it's about the choices you're making in the moment. And you can either behave as what you truly are, or you can behave as what you believe you are. Right now. A miracle is a sudden shift of perception from, we'll say, conflicted thinking to singular mind. This week, go through your day and ask yourself whether you intend not to do anything that will hurt someone's feelings. Whether you intend not to do anything that is unloving. Understanding that being the presence of love does mean saying no when inappropriate behavior is going on. I add that so that you don't think that you're suddenly going to become vulnerable to anyone's behavior. Because you're going to be the presence of love and not be bothered by it. I'm not saying that. That's not love. Okay. Let's go to the book. The ego, the ego wants no part of truth, because the truth is that the ego is not true. It not only is not true, it's not real. It exists only as a figment of the imagination, which you've chosen to believe is the truth, and which you're honoring at the present. Continuing, if truth is total, the untrue cannot exist. Let the reign of divine truth, life, and love be established in me, and rule out of me all self-will. It really means to rule out of me that which doesn't really exist. Self-will does not exist. Important point, write it down. Self-will does not exist. You have made it up, and you act as though what you have made up is true. Again, if truth is total, the untrue cannot exist. Commitment to either must be total, since they cannot coexist in your minds without splitting them. Meaning your minds. If they cannot coexist in peace, and if you want peace, you must give up the idea of conflict entirely and for all time. Well, that sounds like a pretty big order. You don't have to try to do it for all time. All you have to try to do is be unconflicted in the moment you're in. Do I intend not to express something other than love? Keep asking all through the day. See that your intent to be the presence of love, see that it means that you intend not to be the absence of love. And just do it for now, because that's how you promote a shift of perception in practical, embodied ways. Continuing, while you believe that two totally contradictory thought systems share truth, your need for vigilance is apparent. I know that I am the presence of love, but boy, George Bush sure gets my goat. You say things like that, and you don't even question. The logic of what you're saying is so obvious to you, but what you are overlooking is the use you are putting your mind to. You are saying that it is possible for you to be love and yet not be love at the same time. It doesn't matter whether you're talking about George Bush or your wife or the nasty next door neighbor. It doesn't matter what the subject of it is. It matters that you are overlooking the fact that you're trying to use your mind in oppositional ways, being love and being hate simultaneously, without noticing it or questioning it. And when you don't question it, when you don't notice it, you're not being the singularity of mind that you really are. And in that act of forgetting, you lose your singularity as well as the experience of your true identity. So, again, while you believe that two totally contradictory thought systems share truth, your need for vigilance is apparent. Not vigilance against George Bush, but vigilance against your unchallenged attempt to be conflicted, without remembering that conflict is absolutely impossible to you because of what you really are. The conflict and that use of your mind is insane. It is unintelligent. It is unreasonable. Continuing, your minds are dividing their allegiance between two kingdoms, and you are totally committed to neither. Now, your identification with the kingdom is totally beyond question, except by you, when you are thinking insanely. What you are, and listen to this, what you are is not established by your perception and is not influenced by it at all. Now, you can have millions of different perceptions of things, but it doesn't change the thing. Rule out of me all self-will. Rule out of me all perceptions that aren't true, so that I might experience what is established, separate and apart from my perceptions, so that I might experience truth, and so that I might be singular mind. Again, this is important. What you are And I'm going to add, and what everything else is not established by your perception and is not influenced by it at all. All perceived problems in identification at any level are not problems of fact, they are problems of understanding, since they mean that you believe what you can understand is up to you to decide. The ego believes this totally, being fully committed to it. Perhaps one of the most difficult aspects of awakening is that you have to ask God what it is you're supposed to understand. And you have to ask God what the understanding is without trying to figure it out for yourself or without making up an understanding of it by yourself. You have to be willing to abandon, for instance, your allegiance to time so that you might be in the flow of creation, honoring it and rejoicing in it and reveling in it and being surprised by it on its terms. Thy will, not mine be done. That's the stickler, at least for the ego. I'm going to go back. All perceived problems in identification at any level are not problems of fact. They are problems of understanding, since they mean that you believe what you can understand is up to you to decide. The ego believes this totally, being fully committed to it. It is not true. The ego, therefore, is totally committed to untruth, perceiving in total contradiction to the Holy Spirit and to the knowledge of God. Now, of course, it's going to perceive in total contradiction to the Holy Spirit, because this imagined ego states that there is something going on besides the singularity that is God. So it says, there's something else in the water, vinegar, or, well, let's say something more pleasant, honey. It says that the singularity is divided. Therefore, it's going to perceive everything in total contradiction to the truth, because the truth of everything is singularity. It can't see any other way. That which arose out of a imagined postulate of division is going to see division, be division, elicit division, and try to manifest division. Continuing, you can be perceived with meaning only by the Holy Spirit, because your being is the knowledge of God. Let's make this even more relevant. Your being is the acknowledgement of God. Your function is the recognition and acknowledgement of God in each and everything. Your function is to be the awareness of what God is being. It is your function to be that which glorifies God by seeing nothing else anywhere. The book says, your being is the knowledge of God. Well, if you are recognizing, delighting in, recognizing, and glorifying God, then you are the knowledge of God. Any belief that you accept, which is apart from this, will obscure God's voice in you, and will therefore obscure God to you. Why will it obscure it? Because you're giving preference to an imagination. You're giving preference to a daydream. You're giving preference to a figment of your imagination. Your wrongly placed attention is obscuring God from you. It is also nullifying your function because you've abandoned it temporarily to indulge in the satisfaction of having a particularly original viewpoint about creation. Because you're choosing for a supposedly satisfying expression of self-will. Continuing, unless you perceive His creation truly, you cannot know the Creator, since God and His creation are not separate. The oneness of the Creator and the creation is your wholeness, your sanity, and your limitless power. This limitless power is God's gift to you because it is what you are. Again, you don't have a mind, you are mind. Mind is a singularity. It's whole, it's infinite. So there is only one, and that one is God. The mind of God is the mind you are experiencing. But as long as you're intent upon having an experience of your own that you're making up, you will not have available to you the sanity of the experience of your unity with God. Again, this limitless power is God's gift to you because it is what you are. If you dissociate your mind from it, you are perceiving the most powerful force in the universe as if it were weak, because you do not believe you are part of it. Well, not only do you consider it weak, some of you consider that it doesn't exist. There is no God. There's just us, mortals, doing the best we can to survive and maybe improve things a little bit for our children, who are also nothing more than a product of our bodies, purely material, with a brain, and they will have minds of their own, and hopefully we will have improved things so that they have a head start further along than we did and can do better than we did. You see, if you dissociate your mind from it, you are perceiving the most powerful force in the universe as if it were weak, because you do not believe you are part of it. Perceived without your part in it, God's creation is perceived as weak, and those who see themselves as weakened, what? Do attack. The attack must be blind, however, because there is nothing to attack. Therefore, they make up images, perceive them as unworthy, of course. You see, the whole result of this mindset is division. It's not going to characterize anything as helpful. And so therefore they make up images, perceive them as unworthy, and attack them for their unworthiness. That is all the world of the ego is. Nothing. It has no meaning. It does not exist. Do not try to understand it, because if you do, you are believing that it can be understood and is therefore capable of being appreciated and loved. That would justify it, and it cannot be justified. You cannot make the meaningless meaningful. This can only be an insane attempt. So, you know what? We, in a way, are talking about the forms of insanity that are being employed. But remember that it's not so that you can understand insanity, but so that you can see that it is insane. So that you can see that it doesn't hold up in the light of truth. So that you can see that it's not true about you. So that you can see that your definition of the world is not true about creation. And as you begin to be willing to question the way you're seeing things, you will open the door for genuine curiosity to come into play, to see things as they truly are. According to God's understanding of everything. Which brings us back to that powerful word, yield. Doesn't sound like power, does it? You can't yield, you know. You can't wield yielding. Yielding is, to your mindset, passive. It's not doing anything yourself, but it's a powerful word because it cuts through the dream. It cuts through the illusion. It cuts through the suffering, the sin, the disease, the death. It triggers miracles. It triggers sudden shifts of perception, whereby you come back, step by step, perhaps, into your right mind. Continuing, allowing insanity to enter your minds means that you have not judged sanity as wholly desirable. I know at one time or another, every single one of you have said, if I were to yield to God's will completely right now, I wouldn't fit in anymore. No one would understand me. I would be ostracized. I would run into difficulties, and therefore it's not worth it to me. So you have not judged sanity as wholly desirable. Off the top of your head, you would say, well, of course I judge sanity as wholly desirable. Just don't tell me the details of what that means. Continuing, if you want something else, you will make something else. But because it is something else, it will attack your thought system and divide your allegiance. If you want something else but God's will, if you want something else but truth, you will make something up. Now, when you make something up, the first thing you're going to have to make up is some presence to make it up, and that's called the ego. And now we don't have pure water anymore. We don't have pure God anymore. We have God in this little speck of nothing that thinks it's something that's trying to assert itself, and the result, whatever proceeds from that action, will attack your thought system, meaning the thought system of the Christ that you are, and divide your allegiance. Division is the inevitable result of an intent that is conflicted. You cannot create in this divided state. And you must be vigilant against this divided state, because only peace can be extended. You can only give what is whole. Division cannot be extended. But division practiced in your mind will keep you from experiencing your wholeness and the wholeness of the infinitude of your being that is all of creation. Continuing, your divided minds are blocking the extension of the kingdom. Why? Because they're creating division. Your divided minds are blocking the extension of the kingdom, and its extension is your joy. It's your function. It's your nature. It's you being in your right mind. And I'll tell you, it feels good. It's your joy. Continuing, if you do not extend the kingdom, you are not thinking with your Creator and creating as He created. In other words, the singularity of you isn't finding expression where like begets like. And the like that is begotten is harmonious because it has arisen out of a consciously singular experience of mind, of being conscious awareness. In this depressing state, the Holy Spirit, that which is nothing more than your right mind, reminds you gently that you are sad. It doesn't gloss it over. It says you're sad. It makes you look at the fact that you're sad. It makes you acknowledge that you're not really happy, even though in your giddiness you bubbled over with apparent happiness and fooled even yourself a little bit. It says, it reminds you gently that you are sad. Why? So that you can see that there's a call for correction that you haven't been paying attention to in the intoxication of your false sense of happiness. In this depressing state, the Holy Spirit reminds you gently that you are sad because you are not fulfilling your function as co-creators with God and are, therefore, depriving yourselves of joy. This is not God's will, but yours. If your will is out of accord with God's, you are willing without meaning. Yet, because God's will is unchangeable, no real conflict of will is possible. You see, The expression of willfulness by that which doesn't exist does not create conflict between that expression of will and God's will. The expression of willfulness by that which doesn't exist is not an expression of will at all. Nothing's happened. So nothing has happened that's at odds with God. You just think you're having this life where you're determining your lives by the use of the conscious use of your will. But isn't it interesting that as you realize that you haven't been accomplishing anything, you haven't been doing anything real, there's still this whole world, and there's still all of you. Creation is untouched by it, but you're not seeing it as it is. That's all. You're just not seeing it as it is. This, continuing, is the Holy Spirit's perfectly consistent teaching. Teaching you that you're not accomplishing what you thought you were, because you're not what you thought you were, but you are something, and that something is real, and that something is the Christ, and that something is mind, which already is a singularity that doesn't have to become more pure. And it teaches you this so that you might begin to embrace this picture of yourself, because initially it's a picture that has to be given to you. So that you might embrace this picture and your old pictures, which didn't represent the truth, might begin to crumble and lose your attention. Continuing, creation, not separation, is your will because it is God's. And nothing that opposes this means anything at all. Creation, being a perfect accomplishment, the sonship can only accomplish perfectly. There's the singularity again. That which begets, begets that which embodies it. Being a perfect accomplishment, the sonship can only accomplish perfectly, extending the joy in which it was created and identifying itself with both its creator and its creations, knowing they are one. This section is entitled From Vigilance to Peace. The section before was about vigilance. We're talking about a movement. We're describing the fact that vigilance is necessary because you are using your mind in extremely sloppy ways. Ways that allow conflict to be embraced side by side without recognizing that such a thing is absolutely impossible. And you are letting them exist side by side without challenging them and without making a choice so that you are not believing truth and error simultaneously. This section that we've been reading about is describing the fact that although vigilance is the starting point, it's not the ending point. It's not, life is not about vigilance. And there will be a movement from vigilance to peace. But you won't be able to move to the peace until you begin to recognize that you're at the point of perfection and that you must understand yourself therefrom. That mind is and can only be a singularity, meaning without any impurities, no matter how infinitesimal, in it. No impurities of ignorant thinking. No impurities of the sort that says, I'm sorry if I hurt your feelings, I didn't intend to. You see, did you intend not to? Because if you intended not to hurt someone's feelings, the occasion for hurt feelings wouldn't have occurred. Because there was a singularity of intent to be the expression of love, and a singularity of intent to not be the presence of love. Now, we're reading about this movement that involves the recognition for the need for vigilance. And then we're moving on, because you can read faster than you learn. And we're reading about graduating from vigilance to peace. Well, I'm never wasting my breath. But don't make me waste my breath by just learning the ideas that we're reading about. What we're reading about is embodying the truth in involvement, in the way you behave with each other, and the fact that the premise from which you behave toward each other will have absolute results that are completely consistent with the truth of being. If you are being out from the singularity that mind is, everything you do will express unity and will unify. If you choose to come from a conflicted place, if you come from a frame of mind in which opposites can be held, believed, and practiced simultaneously, then everything that follows will elicit, embody, and bring forth the effects of division. The laws of singularity work both ways. The only difference is that when you are willing to be conflicted within yourself and be from that divided context, what results isn't real, because your perceptions don't make your perceptions real. Your perceptions can never be actualized. And so it's all a waste of time, even though you all do it so well. The point is that you're doing it with the only mind there is. And all of what is real about that mind is totally present right now as your mind, because it hasn't stopped being a singularity. To sum up what I'm meaning to convey, awakening isn't a process of getting better. It isn't the process of improvement. It is a process of learning to discern for lack of better words, whether you're intending not to be loving, whether you're intending not to be singular. Whether you just love the thrill of the conflict. It's a choice. It's a simple choice. None of this is complicated. This book is a long book. It's filled with words. But it doesn't mean that what it's talking about is complicated. It simply goes through and uncovers just about every crazy thing you do, so that you might look at it objectively and say, wow, that doesn't make sense, does it? I wish to see the evidence of love. I wish to be the evidence of love. I intend not to see the opposite of love. I intend not to expect to see the opposite of love. I intend not to be the absence of love. Does any of you think I don't love you? Does anyone think Paul doesn't love you? Nobody will think you don't love them if you're willing to let every conscious experience you have be the conscious awareness of God and the conscious awareness of God's point of view, God's perspective, God's understanding about what everything is. I look forward to being with you next week. I love you all.